Logan Kilpatrick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me. I'm excited to chat.
We're very honored to have you here with us today. And you've had a pretty interesting career, having worked at Apple, at NASA, at OpenAI, now at Google, right? With the group being sort of folded into DeepMind, I guess. And at Google, you've been leading the development of Google AI Studio, which is a fascinating platform that the other day was joking that not everyone at Google must not know how awesome it is, otherwise it wouldn't be free. So good that it is, right? But instead of me trying to explain to the listeners, maybe someone who's just joining the podcast recently and haven't talked about AI Studio in a while, would you indulge us and tell us what you're in a better position than us to actually explain what it is? So what is Google AI Studio for?
Yeah, it's a great question. AI Studio lets you go from prompt to prototype and then to production. And there's a bunch of different like ways in which we do that. One of them is the sort of playground if you want to experiment with all of our recent models and sort of test their capabilities and sort of see what's the latest and greatest that Google has to offer. What are all the knobs that you can control as a developer or a builder? The other one, and this is more recent, is this new vibe coding experience. And so if you want to build, literally go from prompt to production and like directly build an app and then deploy it and add a database and authentication and a bunch of other really cool things, we now have that in AI Studio. If you're on the left-hand nav, you can click build. Tons of new stuff shipping literally every day. We just launched in the last couple of weeks this, what we're calling tab, 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 which is the ability to sort of have like generative prompting auto-complete. So you can like start typing in your idea and then the model will actually like try to finish it and you can just press tab and it'll auto-complete. So a nice sort of like homage to the auto-complete in coding, if you're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. And then the other bit of this is actually like helping people access the underlying API as well. So for developers who want to like just, you know, the UI experience is fine and helpful in certain cases, but actually what they really want is an API key and to set up billing and start building on top of the API. There's millions of developers who are sort of using the API and they're using AI Studio to access an API key and all the other things that they need, test out the models, and then go take the API and the SDK and build Gemini into their product or whatever it is. So many different use cases these days. And it's, I think we should talk about this at some point. I think it's getting interesting to see like how wide a single developer, sort of traditional developer product can actually service some of these use cases versus before you could sort of assume that a lot of your users were like the same persona. And I think today the tension for AI Studio is like, actually we have like, you know, the developer at the most advanced companies in the world using the API. And then we have the, you know, my mom building her first app in AI Studio. And it's sort of interesting to see us try to build a product that does both. But there are millions of people on both ends of the spectrum, which is crazy.
And I got to thank you and the people at Google DeepMind for Google AI Studio and for the chance to use the API for free, at least to get like an intro into this world using this API. Because when we are creating the immersions here at Alura, the company in Brazil, we partnered up with Google to teach people about AI, and we were able to use the API using Google AI Studio. And I think you're the only company doing this still nowadays, right? So first of all, a big thanks for that. And when it comes to the platform itself, are you worried at this point, like you said yourself, now it's become something really wide for the person who's a developer, but also to your mom and my mom, who's trying to develop a prototype or something like this. Are you already worried that there's too much stuff in the same place, or you think that's how it's supposed to be?
Definitely a worry. And like, I think our team spends a lot of time thinking about this. We spend a lot of time thinking about like, should we go build this like vibe coding experience in a different product? Should it be something separate?
Like anti-gravity, for example.
Yeah. And I think anti-gravity's focus is slightly different. I think we're using the same sort of like coding agent harness behind the scenes. Anti-gravity is focused on the sort of professional developer audience. There's a bunch of constraints. I think sort of the ethos for AI Studio has been this like entry point to the Google ecosystem. And sort of we're doing that with access to the Gemini models. And then now actually in the vibe coding experience, we're opinionated about this. Like we're trying to, you know, the differentiated edge versus every other startup that exists out there is like we're inside of Google building this product. And so we can do all these really interesting integrations with the rest of the Google ecosystem. And you'll see a bunch of these over the next coming months, weeks and months. And so I think that is a very different angle than I think a lot of other folks are looking at this problem through. And it's also differentiated from anti-gravity, because anti-gravity is trying to sort of be a developer product that anyone can use. You could not be a Google customer except for using anti-gravity, and the product should work incredibly well. In the context of AI Studio, we're very focused on like the Google ecosystem and building on top of the Google ecosystem and surfacing it in an intentional way. But then also, like, if you don't care and you're just trying to build your app, like if it's using Google Cloud behind the scenes, it doesn't matter. Like, it's helpful for us because like we can go collaborate with the Google Cloud team in order to like get every single developer, whether it's, you know, our moms or someone who's deeply technical, building on the best infrastructure. And, you know, for some people, it matters. For some people, it doesn't. But for us, it makes a huge difference because like it gets people into the ecosystem. It gets them building on all the things. And so I think this strategy will pay off long term. Today, I think it's, you know, we'll see. It's early days. But I'm generally excited.
And since we're talking about vibe coding, and we cannot not look at the competition. You're at Google. There are people at Anthropic and OpenAI also launching all of this. Do you also want to be on people's desktops and on people's smartphones with like a Google AI Studio app or something like this, like Cloud Cowork, Cloud Code, and all of that?
It's a good question. I think the like desktop app is not something that we've thought deeply about and put a lot of effort into. I think web on desktop works really well today. And actually, like, it lends itself to the Google ecosystem, which is like very web heavy. A lot of the Google assets are web heavy, with the exception of a couple of apps that you would install. We are doing mobile. So lots of cool internal prototypes today already of our Android and iOS experience. And so hopefully we'll bring those to the world soon, because we actually want to like to meet this next sort of 100 million user next gen developer audience. We think a lot of those folks like are still on their phone today. And so building an experience that works really, really well. And then now even sort of looking farther out, like building an experience where you can have like even local models and being able to build apps with that is really exciting. And the Gemma 4 launch recently, I think, is sort of capturing people's imagination as far as what's possible from a local model perspective. And I have the AI Edge Gallery app, and I play around with those Gemma models all the time. So there's lots of really cool, interesting things that I think we'll be able to do on mobile that sort of will warrant having a native app. I think on desktop, it makes slightly less sense, but it maybe is something that we'll explore at a certain point.
An idea for you. If you're, of course, you're already thinking about this, but when you have this app, the Google AI Studio app, maybe direct publish to the Play Store.
Lots of things. I won't comment, but yeah, lots of things we could do.
Yes.
That's definitely something that lots of, there's lots of potential.
And you already touched a little bit on this, but I was actually curious about how over the last, I don't know, 3-4 months, we've seen this new, everything changed again, right? When it comes to coding and coding agents and the capabilities. And it's something that it's been interesting, because it's the first time I can remember since forever that this same development in the technology has allowed non-technical folks and technical folks to up their game, right? Different aspects of it. But you already touched on this, because you started developing Google AI Studio as this platform for developers, in a sense, and now you have non-developers, or as the term goes, like citizen developers coming into there as well, right? And everybody has been sort of like reaping the benefits of what the technology has been allowing since, I don't know, the end of last year, early this year, right? But I was very curious about the considerations that you have to take, well, into consideration when it comes to developing new products for AI Studio, catering to both publics. Of course, not every single new product will be for both, but you have to attack it from both sides, right? To make it an even more powerful tool set in the platform. It must be challenging, because, you know, you actually have to do all of that before it becomes just something that it's easily accessible, right? Got to be ahead of the curve in that as well, right?
Yeah, no, it is really difficult. I think I'll make a few comments. Like, one of them is something that we think a lot about is sort of like the timeline of building AI Studio. And as the models get better, as we do more work in order to sort of make the product experience more accessible to a wider audience, like the total addressable market increases. So I think if you like Could my mom be really successful with AI Studio? Probably, actually. I think there's certain things that she could do. There's certain things that are probably like frictionful, and she really wouldn't grok, even though my mom is super smart and uses technology all the time. So I think there is something about like we want to try to keep pushing to extend the addressable market. And I think that requires like chipping away at friction. And actually, at the same time, like, even the technical users, like even the like sort of traditional developer audience, like appreciates a great product experience. So I think like we're doing something that's useful for them. And because also at the same time, we're adding all this stuff that makes it more powerful by default. So you sort of have this like ease of use thrust to like help reach this next gen developer audience. And then you have this like powerfulness thrust to sort of help this like, you know, existing traditional developer ecosystem. I think those things together work really well. And I think you see the sort of traditional developer thrust in the API, which is like we're building a whole lot of stuff to make it more powerful to build on top of Gemini models across, you know, agents infrastructure, new gen media models. We just launched Lyria, which is our sort of music model. We have a new Gemini 3.1 actually text-to-speech model that lands tomorrow, which is at the time of this recording, at least tomorrow, which is really exciting. And so I think we have just like a ton of new capabilities that continue to land. And I think those really sort of push the frontier for this traditional developer audience. So we're uniquely positioned, I think, to like do both of these things. I also think like long term, the level of abstraction ends up being actually really similar. So I think there's sort of this temporary moment where the products you kind of want to build look different. I think long-term, they actually look the same. And so, and this actually bubbles up even higher to this like knowledge worker category, which I think like knowledge work and software for a certain set of people, you will like go down into the details. But I think a lot of, you know, 99% of code generated in the future is like probably going to be through this knowledge worker category and not the software developer category. It's worth nuancing that by like, I still think there'll be the like developer category will be probably like an order of magnitude, many orders of magnitude more code that's being generated. It's just like the total volume is going to be like, you know, 10,000x what it is today. Like everyone is going to like have these have like new tools and things being spun up on their behalf, et cetera, which is like a crazy future to think about.
Piggybacking on Marcus's question and on your answer actually as well. Now in 2026, we're at a very different moment than we were like 2-3 years ago when Google AI Studio was more about awareness. Nowadays, it's already established. So what are the most important metrics that you are valuing? Is it like activation, retention, API use, conversion, or still awareness?
You know, there's many interesting metrics. We care a lot about sort of the number of developers who are sort of building both in the vibe coding experience and also in the API. I think on the API, we're like looking at request volumes and sort of like total token consumption. And I think we'll probably have like very interesting, exciting numbers to share there just because like the growth has been incredible to see. There's just like so much intelligence being infused into the world. If you sort of measure intelligence on a per token basis, it's wild. On the vibe coding side, I think we're trying to find, and we're still early in this, like what does success look like? And I think the challenge is it really depends on the user. Like success could, for some users, it's just like, I need this visual representation of my idea because I'm sort of prototyping this experience. And so sort of like just going through the iteration cycle and like seeing something like could be success. For certain users, like success is like they deploy something or they share it with a friend and their friend can use it and play around with it. For some of them, it's like they're actually trying to turn it into a company. And so success looks like they end up with users and revenue and all that stuff. And there's a lot of tension in this, like so many different things that could be a successful use case. And so we're still trying to iron out like how we measure all of those different cases, but like just tracking like the number of apps with databases is an example of this. Like if user opts to do something with databases, like the numbers are all sort of like up and to the right, which is really exciting. So there's no shortage of interesting metrics to track. And I think it'll be interesting to see like as an ecosystem, how this ends up shaking out, because I do think there's a lot of tension in these different use cases. Like the person who wants to just like build a simple prototype to react to versus like the person who's really trying to build an entire company is different. And you actually see this with a bunch of players, like, you know, the folks at Lovable sort of going after this like anything agent, and sort of there's a bunch of other companies doing this too. So I think people are seeing this, which is like some set of users want these products to do more, and sort of how do you let them and enable them to do more. And I think for some products, they're just like want something really simple. They want to make an app. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how the tension shakes out.
You mentioned this about like everyone being a developer or a vibe coder or whatever. When was the last time that you actually wrote code yourself?
That's a great question.
You're actually thinking.
Yeah, I think truly going and writing code from scratch, probably 3 years. So I think since we launched GPT-4, actually maybe more generously 2 years. So I think in the last 2 years, I've probably written I've like edited code manually by hand, but like actually doing a full end-to-end workflow by hand, at least 2 years, which is crazy.
Yeah. And there's actually a question I wanted to ask about. From your tenure at OpenAI, you led developer relations there, which is fantastic. And the list of things that you accomplished while you were there is just mind-boggling. I was checking out your LinkedIn, and it's just an endless list of really cool things that people use up until today that you helped at least develop or establish over there, right? And since you joined Google, it has only been accelerating. So I was wondering, from all the tool set and experiences you developed along your career, and especially in contact with developers, what has been the most valuable things that you've been using today building Google AI Studio based on what you gathered through your career?
It's a good question. I think there's a bunch of interesting themes, and you know, sort of like none of these are going to be, the devil is in the implementation details. And so I think maybe some of them will seem somewhat obvious, but like still, I think, pay dividends today. I think like one of them is this like being this like level of user obsession that you have, I think is like very top of mind. Like I spend a huge amount of my time just like reading feedback that people send and like trying to talk to people and hear about problems they have or things they wish the product could do. And so being grounded in that all the time, like it's the bigger a company you are, the more sort of like things that are happening, the harder it is to do that well. And so I think, you know, for us at Google, it's like being really intentional, not only like me, but like the sort of team more broadly, showing up online in person, like talking to our customers, doing all that, because there's so much coordination inside of Google, because there's so many teams doing different things that like it's easy to get lost if you don't do that. So I think that culture has been super important. I think actually similarly to that, and this is like specific to, I think, building these types of products, though maybe it probably applies more broadly. I think this like showing up and like going direct to users is really important. So like, I think our team is like telling the story directly to our customers and like engaging directly with our customers. And it's less about feedback, but it's also about like, you know, Amar on my team and Kat and Mike and all the folks on the API side and the DevX side, Omar, Philip, Patrick, et cetera, like are all going and talking to developers online and like telling the story. And I think this like ability to tell stories and get people excited about the direction is super important, because ultimately, like, you know, there's a lot of tools to choose from. There's a lot of things you could be doing. And so using our stuff and why you should be building on top of our stuff and why ultimately like it helps move the needle for them is really important for us to do from a storytelling perspective. So I think that part has been like a huge paying of dividends. And then the last one, I think like it'll be interesting to see how this plays out long term, but going and doing the sort of whole horizontal breadth of the work. And I think what's been interesting in sort of at OpenAI for me and now at Google is like I had that horizontal breadth of work at OpenAI. I sort of wore many hats. I was doing product stuff. I was doing DevRel. I was doing engineering work and contributing to the core platform. I was writing our docs. I was going to events. I was doing lots of other things. The same thing is true at Google, and it's a superpower. I think it gives you ultimately like the right perspective to make the right product decisions and build the right things for users, because you sort of see all the different ends of the spectrum. And so it's hard, I think, in practice, it's really hard to do this because, and I feel this tension now more than ever, like as somebody who like has you know, humans on my team that I have to manage and all this stuff. It's just, it requires a lot of time to sort of be across all these things because you need a reasonably high amount of context in order to make the right decisions across all those things. And the context just requires time in order to get it. And so there's real tension with that of like, how do you stay close to the weeds on all these things while also like scaling? And we have a massive business now and millions of customers and, you know, users who are relying on us for their livelihood and all that stuff. And so it's not been easy, but I think the direction of travel is that like member of the technical staff, sort of like full stack builder, whatever it is the sort of persona in the future that I think is just like going to be most successful. It's going to be most sought after from a career perspective. So trying to live that life myself, trying to empower the people that I work with at Google in order to go do that as well.
And since you brought up how many hats you still wear, right? How do you prioritize what needs your attention? Because the demand must come from all sides all the time. How do you go like, wait, I'll deal with this now? Do you have a framework to decide what comes next or what comes first? I know delegation must be a big part of it, but of what depends and relies on you? How do you deal with all of that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not a big framework person. I don't know why. It just has never like resonated with me. So actually like reading the frameworks is actually helpful to like hear about how people think about this, but I don't have that level of sort of rigidness. Maybe I should, maybe it would be helpful.
Well, it seems to be working. I mean,
yeah, it's a good question. Like, I think I have like, I trust my instinct on stuff. Like there's something nice about you can actually, and I think this is definitely a challenge for Google, just like given the size of Google and there's like a lot of people and there's a lot of conversations and we have a lot of like really important collaborations across Google Cloud and Android and lots of other places. And I think there's you can actually just ignore a lot of stuff. And I think this doesn't translate as well to like external stuff. I'm hyper aware of external stuff. I'm less hyper aware of the internal Google stuff because I think there's just like lots of noise. And so I can ignore probably 50% of it. And like, if it's important, somebody will ping me again and sort of it'll self-select for what's actually important. This has a bunch of natural downsides, but it actually generally tends to work. I think my like very tactical thing is like every night before I go to bed, I go look at my calendar and I try to cancel as many meetings as possible. it really helps, honestly. Like, I'm just like, do I need to do this meeting? Is this important? Similarly, like we have this like daily stand-up motion, which I really like, which is like, if something is important and if we're not making enough progress, like we get everyone who is needed every single day until that problem is solved. And so we do this, like there's a bunch of initiatives right now where like literally every single day the team is meeting in order to push the rock up the hill, and trying to be present in as many of those things as possible has been really great. It's also just fun because like you get to see the level of progress that happens and like get people excited. And I think it's just like, yeah, it's easy to get lost with all the things that are happening these days.
And since you mentioned that, I've been seeing your resume here. You're basically doing the bingo in the big tech companies, right? Like it started with Apple, then OpenAI, then Google DeepMind now. And before you were at NASA as well. How did you feel the change of culture and the day-to-day going from one company to the other among these four?
That's a good question. I think when I was at Apple, it was my first sort of job. Actually, I joined Apple full-time before I graduated undergrad. So I was a software engineer at Apple while I was finishing undergrad. And I was obviously not doing anything that was like super critical path. It was interesting. It was fun solving problems. I had spent my early career at the Apple Store and sort of got to work on a bunch of like AI deployments inside the Apple Store. And I think the lesson learned from that was like how interesting having this like domain knowledge was and how much of a competitive edge it was over other folks, because I had lived in the Apple Store for, you know, 3 years. And so I sort of knew the things that a lot of people sort of like academically understood. And I think NASA was an interesting experience, like definitely lots of challenges at NASA from just like a government bureaucracy standpoint. Hopefully they're going in a good direction now, which is exciting, and all the Artemis launches and things like that. But I think that was an interest, like the lesson learned from that for me was like, I spent 3.5 years working on a lunar traverse planning system for the NASA Viper mission. And then it got renamed into something else. And then ultimately the mission got canceled.
Oh, no.
It was a really interesting like reminder that like there are certain things happening in the world where like folks are literally spending like 4 to 5 years working on a project before it ever even maybe sees the light of day. And it's a great reminder. It's like this like timeline reminder. And I like feel this all the time. And like what I personally like is this fast iteration cycle. We get many shots on goal. We can ship stuff very quickly. And I don't like the like 4 to 5 year time horizon stuff. But it's a reminder that like people are doing that. And obviously those things are super important. And there's a class of that work that requires that like long-term point of view. Between OpenAI and Google, the most interesting thing is like, obviously, the companies are at a completely different stage, but the pace inside of DeepMind is basically the same as OpenAI, which I think is awesome. So I think we're moving incredibly fast, and we have the breadth that no other research lab in the world has, which I think is the most interesting part about this. What gets me really excited about what we're doing versus a bunch of the other folks in the ecosystem is like DeepMind is pushing the rock up the hill, not just with LLMs and for developers and consumers and our chat product and that, but it's like every other Google product is involved in that story. We're doing Quantum, we're doing Waymo, we're doing, you know, DeepMind is doing all this AI for science stuff. There's like 50 other things that are happening. And like, we're pretty much at the frontier in like almost all of those things or like deeply competitive. And so I think it's a... it manifests in a bunch of interesting ways from an organizational perspective. The main thing is just like not getting lost in how many people, there's just like tons of people at Google because we're doing lots of interesting things. And so, yeah, it just requires some intentional effort to like not get lost in the sea of people, which you don't have that at small companies, which is just like a byproduct of it being small.
Do you even get to work with these projects or with these people like from AlphaFold or Dolphin Gemma or whatever you're building there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I probably could. This goes back to like, what is the highest impact thing for me to spend my time on? Like, I know the Isomorphic Labs folks, as an example, who are commercializing AlphaFold, have met a bunch of people on that team, and they're incredible. My team is responsible for a bunch of the externalization stuff for Gemma models, and so spend time working with those folks. I don't know if I met the people who did Dolphin Gemma, but it's
we have.
it's cool. Yeah, I think the question is always like where do we add value? And there's just like so much stuff to do that like this level of focus I think is super important. And I think that actually translates so well to this moment that we're all in, where like there's 50 crazy things happening in AI right now, and sort of as a builder, as a founder, just as somebody who's trying to use the technology, like what should you be focused on? I think is like a exercise to go through like on a monthly basis or a weekly basis, because like things are changing so quickly. And if you're not focused on the right thing, like something's going to change and you're going to miss where the opportunity is going to be.
I was wondering, you've spent a good portion of your career knowing what was coming ahead of the curve, because working on these companies that you were actually talking to just about this, because as we're recording, Google I/O is in a month or so. And I just asked you, well, is it hectic? And you went like, no, it's locked in now. You go like, wow, a month before that. So it's just a little bit of how your career has always been sort of in touch with something that's going to come way down the road. Is there still space for you to be amazed at something that when you see it, it's like when you see this breakthrough or what's coming, a new model, something like this? Or is it, have you been sort of like desensitized? And how do you handle knowing what's coming?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think I'm definitely personally desensitized to some of the stuff just because I spend all my time thinking about it. So like a lot of it sort of like tracks, and I haven't seen anything as of late that's like completely out of left field just because there's so much stuff happening. But it is like a great reminder of like putting, I try to put myself in the head of, you know, the, as I was describing before, this like timeline and like the addressable market of this technology over time increasing. And you could do the same exercise for any domain. I was talking before about the context of vibe coding, but like there's millions of people who are just finding out about this AI technology like today, basically literally probably today, hundreds of thousands or millions of people finding out for the first time. And so I think that is like a lot of folks are having that aha, wow moment. And so I think it's there's a huge onus on us to like make sure we build that experience and make it great for people. And I think that same thing is happening across all these other domains now. It's like vibe coding, like the person who couldn't build an app before is now having that aha moment. And like I talk to people all the time and it's the most energizing thing. And they're like, I've always wanted to build this thing. I could never do it. None of the tools worked well. They sort of, you know, they weren't usable by me as an end user. And so I think all of that is like incredibly exciting. There's definitely things that I get mostly excited because it like unlocks something new for users. And I think one of those is like, you know, last year at I/O, we showed this Diffusion Gemini experience, which if folks didn't see, it's like really, really fast code generation. But the interesting artifact of Diffusion, if folks are familiar with it, is that like you actually start with a full set of tokens. Versus normal, like when you ask a language model a question, it like answers one token at a time. So it like streams it across, like somebody's like typing it from start to end. The thing that's interesting about Diffusion is you get like all of the tokens ahead of time, and then a few of them like shift and they change. And then, so the interesting property of this, at least for coding and like visual stuff, is like the first response is like a fully functional, in certain cases, website. And then you see the website sort of like dynamically changing in small ways, but like you start with something that you can react to visually. And so there's things like that that are like model research paradigms that I think like fundamentally change our relationship with these tools. I think now, you know, most recently, all the like agentic coding stuff is crazy. All the like agentic just like products in general are getting crazy with you can like, you know, text an AI app and it'll like go do a bunch of stuff for you. All of that is wild. And I try to keep track of the like wow moments that I have as I see the technology. And it's fun to see like, is the velocity of the wow moments increasing over time as the technology progresses?
I'm actually glad you touched on Gemini Diffusion because right after you announced it, we actually had a special episode interview with João Oliveira from DeepMind. He works in London. And we got very excited about how it worked and the results and the throughput, which is insane. But since then, we haven't really heard anything. Like, it hasn't caught on. I'm not sure if it's the right term to put, but we haven't really seen. It seemed like something that was so promising. And I don't think I've seen anything about it lately. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, we haven't talked about any Gemini Diffusion stuff as of late. I think at the time it was definitely like a research preview. It was like something that folks were trying to explore and find out. And I think the main technical question was just like, is this the direction that we should go for some of these tasks? And I think it worked reasonably well for that use case that we were showing. But I think there's questions of like, what's the upper bound of intelligence that you can get out of that system? And I think there's like a high degree, like architecturally, the Gemini Diffusion stuff was definitely different than what the mainline Gemini models do. So there's a huge cost as far as like, if you really want to go down that direction, there's a lot of like irreversible things that you can't change course on. So I think there's a lot of like cautious optimism as far as like, is that an interesting direction that we'll end up going? So I'm hopeful, like as somebody who's building a vibe coding product, I'm hopeful we end up with things like that, because I think it is like a magic moment if you can. Yeah. And actually today we just launched design previews inside of AI Studio. So like while your app is building, we'll actually, not using Gemini Diffusion, but using some of the other Flash models, will like generate you a preview of what your app's going to look like. And you can sort of choose different themes and UIs and then react to that. So I think there's still things that you can do even without sort of the Diffusion model. But those new paradigms, I think, will be really cool to see over time.
And you mentioned that you're super close to the user, right? And of course, you have this position of product, kind of DevRel that you do for fun kind of as well, but you're also in the community. What are the most impressive, the wow moments that you had seeing things that the community developed using your systems?
Yeah, it is crazy. And we're, it's actually funny you mentioned that. We have like a special I don't even know what the way to describe it is without spoiling it. We have a special sort of homage to all the cool stuff that the community has been doing that we'll sort of showcase at I.O. So I don't know if y'all are going to be there, but you should definitely come to I.O. If you're not already planning to. And I'll make sure that you're on the list and you get tickets. But we'll have sort of this homage to the cool things that users have been doing. So I don't want to spoil it, but you'll see at I.O. And we'll have the ability for like folks more broadly to do it. But it's crazy. Yeah, it's truly crazy to see all the fun stuff that people are building. And we're trying to, I think this like general trend of like, how do we find the best stuff that the community is making and like, and not even always the best, but just like interesting things and share it with the world is very top of mind. I think this is like this inspiration and the art of what's possible, I think, is very top of mind because there's so many people who just like don't know. And so we think about this all the time of like, how can we do more to make sure that people understand what's actually capable? So we'll start doing that at I.O. and we'll sort of continue doing it post I.O. as well, which is going to be fun.
And speaking about I.O., I'm not sure if it was at the Google I.O. or the Google Next 1 or 2 years ago that you launched Genie 3, which was for me a big wow moment. Like, okay, we are there. We got to a moment where we are using, I don't know, kind of nano banana to generate 24 images a second, and I can be in a world, be in a game. And this brought me a philosophical question, like thinking about the future as well. When this is really developed, right now it's a research preview, we all understand that, but when this is a production, let's say 1, 2, 3, 5 years from now. And I think this is where VR is going towards. Like, we're going to be able to be in these games or in the second worlds using VR and having the possibility to change the world or to be whatever we are using technologies such as Genie 3. Of course, it can be used to other stuff as well, for like world models and robotic training, of course. But thinking about this, are you guys already or going back to the idea of having VR at Google as a product? And also thinking about, I don't know, 5, 10 years from now, are we looking at the world from this movie/book Ready Player One or WALL-E?
Yeah, Google is definitely doing a bunch of stuff across the sort of like glasses format. Android XR, I think we've like showcased a bunch of like previews and partnerships across the ecosystem. So definitely something that is of interest. And I think it will be cool to see, like, is it, I'm less in tune with everything we're doing on the AR VR side, but I think there's definitely investments happening. I think the Gemini models are a huge part of that story. Yeah, I think my guess is there will be certain things, like obviously like gaming is a use case, and like, you know, the Ready Player One experience is like more or less, I think it's like a very, very, very deep end of the spectrum as far as like what the gaming experience could be like at a certain point. But it's like definitely the extreme. I think the like more simple stuff that like you see today, which is like people wearing.
What I meant by Ready Player One world was like everyone sitting at home and being their VRs instead of going out to the world as well.
I'm highly skeptical that will be the direction that things end up going. And I actually think like in the part that was missing in, it's always interesting to like watch those types of like future sci-fi movies and then like seeing the technology we have today that is like completely absent from the story and then thus would like make a lot of the direction of how things shake out like completely not plausible. I think one example of this is like in that show, they don't have this like super advanced AI system that is like living in everyday life. I think there's obviously some AI that's in there. But I think AI is going to have this like great reinforcement of like human, the like human to human connection. I think at the same time that like AI is super powerful, I think like the value of human connection is like extremely deep and the value of that is on an exponential. And so I find it like super odd and unlikely that we would all be like VR headsetting in, because I think at the end of the day, like it's biologically wired into humans. Like I want, and that's also why I'm like slightly skeptical of the like future where everyone's running their own billion-dollar company or whatever it is, whatever the like hype talking point is. Like the smartest people know other smart people and other people who are great, and they want to work with those people. Like if I had tools that could do everything for me today, I wouldn't choose to go work by myself. I would choose to go find other incredible people and work with them and do the thing that we're all excited about. Like, obviously, like there's an upper bound of that. Like maybe I don't need to have, you know, 50,000 people on my team or 1,000 or whatever it is. But you want people on your team who have a different perspective. And like you're just because AI is smart doesn't mean it's going to replace the need for that or the desire for humans to want to work with other people. So I think that's going to be very true in the context of like AR, VR stuff as well.
And my last question for you is there an itch you'd like to scratch that may not be related directly, at least at first, with Google AI Studio that you've got your eyes on? You saw something that was like, oh, this would be interesting to look into, but maybe something to do in the future. What has been piquing your interest when it comes to what's coming ahead?
Yeah, actually on this line of thinking about like what ends up being the thing that most people are doing in the future, or like a lot of people are doing more than happens today. I think one example of this is like business and entrepreneurship. I think there's the future is like many, many more people having their own thing and trying to like build a real business and all that stuff. And one example like that I'm actually really interested in, and we'll hopefully have a bunch of cool stuff to come in the future around this, is around sort of this like student demographic or this like early career demographic. I think there's been this like huge compression of sort of like early career opportunity. I think obviously, you know, I was a benefactor of like all these internships. I interned at NASA, which led to my sort of contractor role. I interned at Apple and a bunch of other places, which led to my full-time job. And so I think as sort of like the future of internships and early career stuff is in flux and there's a bunch of questions being asked, I think like the exciting thing is like, it's now way more accessible for that student or early career person to just go make a company. Like I probably would have made a company and not gone and done internships if it had been more accessible. But I was like, even for myself as somebody who's like a reasonable software engineer, like there wasn't really anything I could build. You sort of needed a lot of engineers. You needed like a deep level of expertise and all this stuff in order to build something great. And so I didn't go down that route, but I think now the tools are sort of at the disposal of more people. So I think spending a lot of time thinking about it's like vibe coding plus, which is like, how do you actually help people build businesses and like create livelihoods? And I think there's a lot of like similarities to what's happened with creators on YouTube and stuff like that. And that whole like creator category, I think something very similar is going to happen in the context of like vibe coding plus. And so trying to look around that corner and figure out how it all shakes out.
And you're an angel investor, so you do invest in many companies such as Cursor and many others. So if you were to start a startup today or advise someone of our listeners who maybe want to start a startup today, what would you tell them not to go into? Because like LLMs or AI is going to absorb this very soon, and where is still underdeveloped that they should go into?
Yeah, there's definitely, I think a lot of the obvious ideas are this like very general purpose horizontal products. These are the most difficult things. Like if you're building like a general purpose horizontal agent to do something, you're like competing against Gemini and ChatGPT and Anthropic and 50 other companies. And it's just like a lot. Obviously the market is big, but there's like a huge amount of competition. I think you need this, you know, and I'll give an example of this. Like, if you're going to go after some of these categories, you need the like wedge in order to get your foot in the door and like have it actually be a wedge that gets users excited. A good example of this is like Poke, the sort of like iMessage assistant. Sort of the wedge is like it's through iMessage and it has sort of this like interesting personality. And obviously it's a general purpose assistant, but like you line up the fact that it's a form factor that, you know, every Apple customer at least has access to, and it's a personality that was like really interesting, and like there's actually a compelling value proposition for that. There wasn't anyone else who was really doing that. And so I think you can find these like big general markets where everyone's sort of like roughly familiar with the problem space. You just need to get those like interesting wedges. And my worry for people is like there's lots of like generic products that are being built that like don't have whatever that wedge is. And so it's a it's going to be difficult to like find a market and find product market fit. I think the opposite end of the spectrum is like really specialized domains where like there's not a lot of competition. There's like not a large market either, but like you can sort of go after these things that like basically no one else is going after. And that the tension with that is it requires domain knowledge of a space that, which like you might not have, but you could have. And if you have domain knowledge in these spaces where like no one else is going after this, it could be really, really interesting. And specifically now, like this big explosion of different possible, you know, ecosystems that you can like do a lot of research about, I think is also really interesting. And like using deep research tools to like learn about new spaces and like try to find that niche, I think is really exciting.
And my last question for you is, if people who are listening here would love to work with you at Google DeepMind, what is the path that they should do?
Build something cool and then email it to me. That's what I would love to see. So build cool things, send me what you're excited about. And this like proof of work, I think is super compelling. So send me stuff. My email's all over the internet. Same with like Twitter and LinkedIn. So send me cool things that you built and would love to hear more.
Oh my God. I don't want to be your inbox now.
We usually say like, how should folks reach you? You already said that. So I'm going to thank you so much for your time and sharing your knowledge with us. This was pretty awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you both for the thoughtful questions. Hopefully this was useful. And if folks have feedback or comments or things that they want from AI Studio, we're building this for the ecosystem. We really are super excited about sort of enabling this next generation of builders. So send us ideas and feedback and we'll keep pushing the rock up the hill for folks.
Legal. Muito obrigado mais uma vez. Parabéns mais uma vez. A gente adora o AI Studio, uma ferramenta fantástica. Obrigado. E para você que acompanhou até agora esse papo e ficou com ainda mais vontade de ter esse contato mais próximo com o Vale do Silício, o Logan tá lá, né? Se você também quer estar lá, você faz o seguinte, você passa aqui na descrição do episódio e pega o link para a missão IA Sob Controle junto com a Startse no Vale do Silício de 31 de agosto a dia 4 de setembro para visitar as empresas, as universidades, ter contato direto, ouvir e aprender com as pessoas que estão moldando esse futuro que vem chegando aqui pra gente todas as semanas. Então não perde a sua chance. Estão acabando as vagas, a gente comentou recentemente, tem pouquíssimas vagas. Não perde a sua chance de ir, não só comigo, com o Fabrício, com o Paulo Silveira, com o Marcel Almeida, mas de estar lá, aprender, ouvir dessas pessoas, viver esse ambiente do Vale do Silício, que, sem dúvida, é muito legal. E eu e o Fabrício voltaremos na sexta-feira com o nosso resumão das notícias do mundo da inteligência artificial. Até lá!
Este podcast foi produzido pela Alura, mergulhe em tecnologia, e Faculdade FIAP, Let's Rock the Future. Edição Rede Gigahertz de Podcasts.